Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mark Brewer to the broadcast. Mark is the Chief Information Officer of Seagate Technology, a global leader in data storage solutions. As CIO, Mark is responsible for all aspects of IT strategy and operations for the company, including business systems, manufacturing and execution systems, and the corporate IT infrastructure. Mark joined Seagate in 1992 and advanced to become CIO in 1997. Mark completed his bachelor's degree, master's degree, and PhD in electrical engineering at Oklahoma State University. I recently caught up with Mark by phone in his office in Oklahoma City, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle one, people, as we discussed how he manages a broadly distributed multinational team and fosters a culture open to innovation and transformation, principle two, infrastructure, as we discussed the challenge of balancing the implementation of new technologies while weighing security risks, principle four, IT business partnerships, as we discussed the multitude of communication mediums he uses to disseminate information, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Mark Brewer, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Peter, glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. So, Mark, I thought we'd begin with a description of Seagate's business. No doubt many of our listeners would know of Seagate, but would love to hear in your own words, especially as a veteran of the organization, what it is that Seagate does and also your role in IT.
Well, Seagate Technology is one of the long-term tech companies. We've been making disk drives for a long time. There used to be 150 companies doing that. There's down to just a handful now. So we are in the traditional disk drive space. We also have solid-state products. We have some cloud services and technology that we're now selling, and so we're diversifying a little bit. But we're centrally located in the storage space. That's who we are at Seagate. I am the CIO here. I've been the CIO for a long time. I have the traditional IT functions, and then I also have responsibility for the manufacturing execution systems in our factories, which typically is in engineering or operations, but here it's in IT.
Excellent. And speaking of your role as CIO, you have an unusually long tenure as the IT lead for Seagate, nearly 18 years, which is really extraordinary at a time when the average tenure is still between 4 and 5 years for chief information officers. And one of the things that really intrigued me as I thought about that, Mark, is no doubt you have introduced, perhaps even your team built technologies that you have had to replace, that you've had to transition from sort of the pre-cloud computing period to now more software as a service type model solution. You became CIO at a time when offshoring wasn't necessarily as much a lever that IT leaders were choosing to pull. Now that is much more part of the bailiwick of IT. And again, a lever that IT leaders choose to pull, in fact, to create an IT operation that is more efficient, just to mention a couple of trends. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that evolution over the 18 years and how IT has changed and how IT specifically at Seagate has.
It's interesting to be at a place and see things come in and then go out. And we've definitely been here long enough to do that. I tell people that fundamentally I'm responsible for everything. Everything that's a problem, it's my fault because I've been here so long. We have had very large turnovers in technology. I certainly went through the Y2K era here and then the dot-com era and then all the supply chain and optimization that people did for a while and then the downturns in 2008, 2009. So it's been an up and down and interesting journey along the way. We have done all the things you mentioned. We have big cloud plays with OpenStack and We use Google's applications and Salesforce in the cloud. We have done offshoring. We have big operations in Asia. We have a bit of an advantage in that a lot of our footprint is sitting in Asia. So I have majority of the IT staff sitting in Malaysia and Thailand and China and Singapore. So we are a global organization, IT-wise, and leverage really great talent around the world to do the things that we have to do. And then we have third-party partners in India and elsewhere that we use at times for projects and for support. So we have gone through that whole role. And one of the dangers of being in a place so long is that you could have made a decision 7 or 8 years ago on a particular item. And in your mind, that decision's been made, but the world has changed in 7 or 8 years, and you need to make a different decision. And so I think that's one of the risks I have. And I talk about it here. I talk about it with my staff and with others, that I have to be careful, my staff has to be careful, that we aren't locked into a decision that we made years ago just because I've been here a long time and some of my key players been here a long time.
And how do you create a culture that is so flexible of mind? I know a lot of IT people, whether it's the leaders or people in the team, often feel precious about the things that they have implemented, and especially precious about the things they've developed. And what you're describing is a need to cannibalize some of what has worked well, perhaps even some of those things that may have been the foundation of your success in the past. But for whatever reason, time has passed enough that they are becoming less relevant or perhaps less reliable. How do you foster a culture that's open to that degree of change and transformation?
I don't know how to answer that. I just think that you don't wed yourself to something. You're trying to find the best low-cost solution to do whatever it is that needs to be done. And, you know, I don't want to attach my name to a particular thing and say, this is me at this place. And I don't think we do that. I think we're more focused on partnerships with the different business organizations, that we have a great partnerships with our key business players here, where it's not the business and IT, it's us working together collectively. So the dialogue is pretty constructive with all the organizations, and it has been, you know, for an extended period of time. And I think that helps it be that way. It's not like you have two camps jockeying for something. It's us collectively trying to figure out how to do something better.
Excellent. You once reported to the CFO when you took on your role originally. You now report to the CEO. You're part of Seagate's executive committee. There are a lot of other CIOs, and though I should say, actually, a lot of progress has been made. Many more CIOs report to CEOs today than they once did even 3 or 4 years ago. But there are still a great number of CIOs who wish to follow you down that same path. Can you describe how and why this change came about?
Well, I would say it's largely driven by our CEO's recognition that IT is a central piece of anything we do. And I have this belief that IT is becoming a bigger and bigger piece of companies. And even if they don't want it to be, it is becoming a bigger and bigger piece because we're connecting everything together. And you're stitching data from one side of the company with something on the other side of the company. And so you're investing more, you're doing more analytics, you're doing big data things, whatever that might mean in a company's context, across your enterprise or your customers or suppliers or whatever. And that's stitching everything together. And I think Steve Aluso here, the CEO at Seagate, realizes that that is an important part of who we are and how we're going to be successful. And I think also we've done a good job at being credible with him and over time and executing on what we say we're going to execute on. We just did a gigantic ERP upgrade this past weekend across the whole company, and it was a non-event. And so when you can do those things repeatedly, I think that helped on credibility and stature in the organization, you know, project management-wise, getting things done wise, prioritization wise. But I would attribute it largely to Steve Luso's view that IT is such a critical part of the company.
And can I ask you, you know, especially now that you're a member of the executive committee, as you have been for a while, you know, you have regular reason to speak with the board of the organization. On the one hand, of course, you have the luxury of being an IT leader in an organization that is profoundly about IT. Your colleagues outside of IT have a great appreciation and curiosity about technology, unlike a lot of your peers as CIOs. In other environments, in less tech-centric organizations. But are there certain ways in which you've had to evolve your own means of communicating what it is you're hoping to do or your own plan to make sure that it's in terms or serving metrics that are more broad than traditional IT terms and metrics?
Well, lots of different versions of that story over time. You know, we used to do, for example, a strategic plan here on a regular basis, and I used to be very fanatical about generating a new strategic plan every 2 or 3 years. And I, about 4 years ago, realized that the business is changing so fast that generating some formalized document that says, here's our plans for the next 3 years, is out of date by the time it's done. And so we quit doing that. We had a balanced scorecard here we did for a while, and I came to realize that wasn't really necessary anymore either. either. We do a lot of online communications on either our microblogging platform, which is Chatter, and on a blog that I do inside the company, which I've now been doing 5, 6, 7 years, I guess, or maybe longer. I don't remember what year I started, but, you know, and on the blog, I'll talk about successes and failures and why we're making certain decisions and priorities and compliment a team and chastise ourselves on certain things. And so hopefully, in a sense, we have a culture of being really transparent and trying to tell people what we're doing and why we're doing it. And at times, even as we talk about my goals, which we do in an annual process, you know, I'll put draft goals out there and ask anybody in the company for feedback on these goals. Do you think these are the goals IT ought to be focused on? And so it's just out in front of everybody, and they get a chance to comment if they want to and contribute. And I've used that, you know, when you, in a sense, crowdsource things like that, you get really nice tweaks and you think about things or things get highlighted to you that you wouldn't have thought of without that. And so I think some of those things help a lot. Certainly being able to talk to Steve's staff on a regular basis is a real plus. And we meet on a regular basis and talk about the business and strategy and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of strategy, you have a large and broadly distributed team, over 1,800 people across 13 countries, 33 locations, if I've got that data correct. How do you govern a team to ensure that everyone's kind of operating against the same plan and ensure that communication is flowing consistently and smoothly? Obviously, you're having to translate that quite literally across a variety of different languages and different situations. How do you ensure that it's operating as efficiently as possible, as complex an organization as the one you run?
Oh, I think it's a great team. I've got a good staff, and we are very open in our plans and communications. We have this model that we picked up a couple of years ago about shared consciousness that we have adopted, where we do most of our project reviews and our strategy discussions in the open on WebEx meetings, and those who need to participate are welcome to participate. It's not small teams only talking about projects. We record a lot of those so that people in other time zones are able to listen to them if there's one of particular interest that's maybe out of phase with them because they're on the other side of the world. Certainly the communications with the blog and Chatter, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I think that helps. We do a lot of video and telepresence here. Travel, I just got back from Asia. I was in China and Singapore and Malaysia just 2.5 weeks ago. So I think we operate as a really small IT organization, even though we're scattered around the world. And it's just, it's a real challenge with the time difference, you know, doing teleconferences and video conferences at night. Everybody's doing that around the world. And so one of the things I really try to be conscious about is sharing the pain on that so that I'm not inconveniencing the folks in Asia all the time. So I have 2 or 3 or 4 calls at night in the U.S. time so that they can have some of the meetings during their morning. And so we're all kind of conscious of that and try to be respectful of each other, even though we're operating all the way around the world. But I've got a great team, a great set of direct reports and directors, and I'm terribly blessed by having the management team that we have here in IT. It's a good group.
And how do you distribute work across that diverse team? Are there certain locations that handle very specific and discrete types of tasks? Is it comparable work that's being done across the different regions? How is that organized?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have teams around the world that might specialize in Seagate.com is managed by a team in one part, and our factory systems for our drive operations are managed in Singapore. And, you know, a lot of the finance work is done in Thailand and in the U.S. So they're specialty in different groups around the world. And so anything that's having to do with finance is kind of targeted into these two groups. And they work together, and one reports to the other and then back to me in some fashion. So it's not peanut butter spread around the world. We very much are having specific teams focused on particular things in different locations. And then in the factories, because we have a large factory footprint, each of the factories has its local IT support group that in particular takes care of the manufacturing execution systems there locally, as well as support for that factory in everything. So finance problem comes up in a factory in Thailand, then somebody there locally would, you know, try to help the local operations team with that, and if necessary, escalate out to the bigger support group elsewhere.
We've spoken a bunch about communications and the way in which you disseminate information. I know one of the ways you do so is with a blog. You have a blog that's both for internal as well as one for external consumption. And I'm curious how regularly you contribute to it, how you determine what to share, and what sort of feedback you get from internal and external channels with this means of communication.
You know, I started both of those just to figure out how that works and what that was like. And the one inside was for communications, and I get great comments on it. And I occasionally will slow down, or I may even not do anything for a while, and then people will kind of chide me about it and want me to get going again. And then, you know, I'll do a post and I'll get 40 comments on a post, which is a lot. And so I think it's just a channel where you're communicating to those who want to dial to that channel. And sometimes some of your folks, email is the best platform. Others, you need to go see them face to face. Others, if they can follow along on what you're thinking with a blog, then that's very helpful. And in fact, they get a chance to comment or give you feedback. I think it's back to that transparency and collaborative kind of mindset we have. And I think all of these little things together help make that culture work. The one on the outside I did just for the fun of it, and I don't post as often as I should, but I'll occasionally something will strike me and I'll go make a comment about this or that. I probably post once a month, maybe a little more often than that. And sometimes I'll do a bunch in a row and then not do one for a little while. And, you know, both of them are just experiments on how to communicate and how to engage and collaborate with others. And I get comments in both places. And I find more people read them than comment even. Somebody will make a comment to me that tells me they read something, but there's no indication that I have on either one of those platforms that they did. So it's just an interesting experiment. And then you learn how to communicate. You learn what your voice is and how to write and just be plain and simple and be yourself. And it's just interesting to both have a topic you want to write about and then develop that voice to do it. And it's been an interesting experience.
And how do you think of the use of a blog versus other social media? I know you're very active in a variety of different social media. And I'm curious, I mean, there's obviously the longer form that's available on a blog versus tweeting, for instance. But in terms of the amount of time spent in each of those or the value you're deriving from those, how do you think about the different channels that you're leveraging?
Well, I read a lot. I follow a lot of online sites and blogs and newsletters. And when something strikes me as interesting or something that I want to pass along, I'll retweet that. And so a lot of the tweet stuff is sharing things that have, for one reason or another, caught my attention. And so, you know, I probably do 4, 5, 6 posts a day on Twitter. The blog is just more of a, you know, a longer form, you know, ability to rant or get on a soapbox or offer additional commentary. And Twitter is pretty short at just a few characters. And so you just kind of do different things on different platforms. And they're both interesting. And I get different people interacting and differently on the different platforms. I enjoy it. And then what it also lets me do is kind of have some conversation back with Seagate's and our social media strategy, because in a sense, I understand how that works a little bit. I'm not a rock star or anything on either platform, but I at least understand what you can and can't do and why this and why not that. And so it allows me to have a little different conversation with Seagate and others about social media and social networking and pluses and minuses and whatnot. It's just been a great experience.
That's excellent. And I wonder if we can conclude with some technology trends that particularly excite you. As you look out a year or two or three, what are some of the things you're beginning to investigate, either personally or professionally, that particularly excite you?
Well, I mean, you have to start with just growing and ever-increasing security concerns. So, every CIO on the planet has to be dialed into risks and how to manage risks and how to deal with threats. And so, you know, we're all tuned into developments in that space and breakdowns that companies have or organizations have and how to perhaps best deal with that. So I think that's one that I read a lot about and pay attention to. Cloud storage and cloud compute capabilities are interesting and are going to keep growing. I think it's a long road to get there. Some people think like we're all going to flip over and do everything in the cloud next Tuesday, and that's not really going to happen. It's going to take a while because you get big corporations, you have big embedded bases of systems and processes that are sitting in existing data centers on equipment that really doesn't have a path to go to a cloud solution. And maybe one day it'll be there, but it's not there today. But the developments in cloud technology are interesting. Storage is interesting. Certainly, I'm at a storage company. What intrigues me is just how much digital content we're all saving, both as individuals and as companies. And I was talking to a leader at another company recently, and his storage and his IT shop had doubled in 18 months. They went from 40 petabyte to something like 95 petabytes in 18 months of storage inside corporate IT. And I frankly think that's happening everywhere because we're saving more digital content and we have more data that we're collecting from our operations and about our customers, and you're wanting to keep it longer and you want to do more analytics on it. And so I just think storage just keeps on going, and it'd be interesting to watch that over the next 5 years. too. So that's three areas that are kind of interest to me.
Just one follow-up question. The balance between pursuing new technologies, new innovations on behalf of the organization versus security. Having that balance correct between risk-taking and risk mitigation, it can be a difficult one. And I wonder, how do you think about that? How do you orient your organization to ensure you're not out of balance in one direction or another?
That's the chief concern of the day, frankly. I mean, everything new and even older things, what's the security implication of this? And you begin, after you do this long enough, you realize and see security risks with things maybe before others do. And you ask more penetrating questions of vendors about this or that, or people wanting to change a business process. Have you thought about X or Y? And so you begin to have this security mindset. And I think boards need to have more security presence on boards to ask those kinds of questions from their IT shops, because the questions are different. And you have to be really thoughtful about security. And so you're asking the hard question, I think, that CIOs are wrestling with today is how to balance security with, frankly, collaboration on the other side of the coin there. How do I reduce friction and get people working and organizations working to get better, faster with securing intellectual property in the enterprise? And that's, a trade-off that you're constantly making every day.
Well, Mark Brewer, thank you so much for joining us in the forum on world-class IT and providing a bit of the insights as to how you become the successful CIO you are.
Thanks, Peter. Glad to be here.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.